Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome to HealthyLife.net, Positive Talk Radio. I'm Dr. Marilyn Singleton, and this is Health Freedom Now. Keeping our health freedom of choice alive is even more important the older we get. People are living longer, and by 2030, about 1 in 5 Americans will be age 65 and older. Unfortunately, around 60% of adults suffer from at least one chronic condition. Among those 60 and older, at least 80% have a chronic illness and 50% have two. And some of these conditions are heart disease, cancer, stroke, blindness, COPD, asthma. So a lot of things out there. One reason we need to stay healthy our whole lives. But some of these people are going to need long-term care. And if long-term care is in your future, you've got to remember to do something about it now. My guest today is a highly regarded national expert in long-term medical care. Steve Moses is president of the Center for Long-Term Care Reform. The center promotes universal access to top-quality long-term care by encouraging private financing as an alternative to Medicaid dependency for most Americans. His recent monograph on the issue, Long-Term Care, the Problem, is now followed by Long-Term Care, the Solution. And we are going to talk about that today. Welcome to the show, Steve Moses.
Thank you. It's very good to be with you again.
Okay. Well, let's just backtrack for a minute and let everybody listening know, what is long-term care?
Well, long-term care involves both the medical and custodial assistance that people need when they can't entirely take care of themselves anymore. And that may be due to an injury, to an illness, or just the frailty that comes from old age. Cognitive impairment is a serious vulnerability of people as they get older. So anytime you need help with some of the normal activities of daily life, transferring from place to place, going to the bathroom, bathing, even eating. When you need help with things like that, you need some form of long-term care services or supports, they often say, instead of just long-term care.
Well, so what kind of care do people get? Is it nursing homes, home health care, and who pays for it? How does it work now?
Well, those are very good questions. Generally, when people begin to need long-term care, they'd much prefer to receive it at home. But when that becomes a challenge, there are a number of options available, including assisted living, which involves independent living, but with people available to help you out if you need a little extra support. And worst case scenario, when the time comes that you need highly skilled medical care to be available 24 hours a day, that's when people begin to look at a nursing home. Generally, people would like to avoid nursing home care if they can, but one of the problems we have in the United States is that we have an institutionally biased long-term care system. This is largely because Medicaid, since 1965, has paid routinely for nursing home care, but only under very limited circumstances for home and community-based care. So it's very important for people to plan ahead so that they're able to get the kind of care they prefer, and they're most able to do that if they are able to pay privately. Our serious problem with long-term care in the United States, however, is that since 1965, the government has paid for most catastrophically expensive long-term care. And that has sort of anesthetized the public to the risk. They tend not to plan ahead for long-term care, but to ignore the issue until they begin to need it later in life. And Medicaid, which is ostensibly a public assistance program, welfare, has allowed people to qualify even with substantial income and preserving substantial assets. That's not commonly known. People do not generally plan on relying on Medicaid if they need long-term care. But the fact that Medicaid has been there and enabled their denial earlier in life results in most people coming to the point of needing long-term care later in life and slipping down a slippery slope, as it were, of eligibility to qualify for Medicaid. We can review how Medicaid financial eligibility works, or we can move it now to what needs to be done to resolve that.
Well, I just in listening to you, it just makes me think of how we kind of are in America anyway. We are not big people who plan ahead, and we don't even plan ahead about our regular health. And this has always been a big problem, that we don't even do preventive care. And in a way, what we're talking about today is along those same lines. We have to do preventive care as far as how we're going to finance long-term care. I would like you to briefly describe what people do now and how this Medicaid financing works. And people need to know this, because when you get to the solution, so people can kind of see the difference of what's going on financially to pay these what could be up to $100,000 a year in bills.
Exactly. Long-term care is very expensive, regardless of where you receive it. Easily over $100,000 a year for nursing home care, half that or more for assisted living, and in the same ballpark, if you're going to have home and community-based care for any significant number of hours per week. So once people need substantial level of long-term care, it becomes very expensive very fast. People start off kind of expecting Medicare to pay for it. Didn't that make all of our medical expenses go away some 60-odd years ago? But they find out that Medicare covers only, for the most part, subacute and rehabilitative care, mostly in nursing homes or in restricted home care. So that isn't much help. It doesn't take long for people, or in many cases their adult children, to research long-term care and find out from numerous sources on the internet and in published books how to qualify for the government program that does cover expensive long-term care services, and that program is Medicaid. Now, Medicaid is technically public assistance. It's welfare. You're not supposed to get it. And the conventional wisdom is that you can't get it until you spend down your income and your assets into virtually total impoverishment. Well, the reality is very different. To qualify for Medicaid long-term care benefits, you do have to have an adequate medical need. You need to require the equivalent of institutional care. But if you meet that requirement, there are financial eligibility rules, including income. Now, it says in the law that your income needs to be very low, something like under $1,000 a month. But in reality, the way eligibility is determined based on income is that most states deduct your private health and long-term care expenses from your income before applying a low income standard. Well, most people at that age, and if they need long-term care, have very high expenses. So that means that folks with substantial income can qualify for Medicaid. In most states, it's done the way I just described it. In some states, they have an income cap. But in income cap states, there are income diversion trusts that enable people with higher income to qualify. Bottom line, to keep it simple, the rule of thumb is if your income is below the cost of a nursing home, easily $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month, not low income by any means, if your income is at that level or below, you qualify based on income. Now, assets, it's commonly understood you can't have more than $2,000. So the presumption is you have to spend down for care until you get to that level of impoverishment. But the reality is that the vast majority of assets that seniors hold of any size are exempt already. That includes home equity up to over $1 million in several states, but no less than $713,000 anywhere in the country. So between home equity, which is exempt, one automobile, income-producing business, IRAs, personal belongings, home furnishings, basically there's very little left after you back out all the exempt assets. But when people still have countable assets, such as cash or stocks, bonds, and so on, those are easily converted to exempt status simply by purchasing exempt assets. So the reality with Medicaid eligibility is that it's much easier to obtain. The rules are much more generous and very elastic. On top of everything I already said, there are attorneys who specialize in impoverishing their affluent clients artificially to qualify them for Medicaid. And you might wonder, given the reputation Medicaid has for such poor access and quality, because it pays only about two-thirds of what private payers have to pay for care, why would upper middle class and affluent people seek out the help of attorneys in order to qualify? Well, the reason is that the attorneys also advise people to hold back what they call key money. Hold back from your Medicaid planning self-artificial impoverishment enough cash to pay privately for a while. Then you can buy your way into the nicest facilities that maybe don't have very many Medicaid beds. You can get the best access to the best care by paying privately. The sad irony is that poor people for whom Medicaid is supposed to be a real safety net they don't have key money. They can't buy their way into the best places, and so they end up with the worst Medicaid has to offer. And that's one reason we're seeing now a large and rapidly growing peer-reviewed literature about the structural racism in Medicaid long-term care. So it's a very sad mess, and it's very important for people who get the message that you don't want to be caught in that trap. You want to understand these issues now and do some planning if you possibly can, so that when the time comes, you'll be able to pay privately to get the care you need. And as we begin to transition to the solution, it's critical to understand what these problems are so that you can conceive what could be done to change the government interference and financing that created the problems by engaging the private sector and private financing more and more. That's the essence of the solution, and how to do that, I think, is our principal message today.
Well, it's interesting, as you describe this, what was going through my mind is, okay, Medicaid is a program that should be reserved for financially strapped and honestly poor people. And people can be thinking, well, it's the rule. It's the way the government put out the rules. So why shouldn't I suck off the government? And one of my big answers to that is, one, Medicaid facilities are not the greatest, and suddenly you'll have no options. And one of the things we here at Health Freedom like to talk about are keeping our options open. So this is one of the things why this is so important, that even though it's legal and people can find a way to squirrel away money and take advantage of free, quote-unquote, government money, there's something bigger than that. And there's your comfort and even a sense of ethics. And a term that you'll use, and I'll ask you to define as we talk about these solutions, is something called moral hazard. And maybe before we go to the break, we'll just get in very briefly to solutions and describe what moral hazard is before the break.
Okay. Well, in essence, what has happened is that the government has seduced consumers, creating a sense of denial about long-term care risk, even though we see constant coverage in the media. Gee, Mrs. Jones, if you don't plan ahead, you could lose your life savings. Well, it hasn't been true. The public didn't believe it. And the consumer behavior has never changed despite all the efforts over time to convey to people that they have a personal responsibility. Now, the fact that government pays for the vast majority of expensive long-term care after the insurable event occurs, and even on top of that, allows people to retain substantial wealth, that is the moral hazard that was created. In other words, moral hazard means that if you're protected, if you're insured against a risk, you're more likely to take that risk than you would be if you were not protected. So the essence of the solution is that we have to take away that moral hazard. We have to take away that public policy that enables people to ignore long-term care risk and then props them up later on. So what do we have to do? Well, we need to get rid of the kinds of eligibility rules that protect people and allow them to ignore long-term care until they need it. What are some of those? Well, we have a home equity exemption of over $1 million in many states. Why should a public welfare program be protecting real estate millionaires against the risk of needing long-term care. So that needs to go. Instead of a five-year look back on asset transfers, which is what we have now, you can get rid of $1 billion 5 years ahead. Let's move that out to 20 years. It mostly would involve home equity. People would plan maybe 5 years in advance, but not 20 years in advance. So there are a number of things that can be done to change public policy to encourage people to take personal risk seriously earlier. Well, that brings up the question as well. How are people supposed to protect themselves? How can young families who are saving for retirement, saving for children's education, paying mortgages, paying on automobile loans, they're stressed out. So the question becomes, how can we help them prepare for long-term care if we're sending the message that you can no longer ignore this risk? So I think that would be a good place to go in our next segment.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does, especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Faucet running? That's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest. Forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
I didn't know the trees were so amazing.
Yep, and the forest gives us shade, trees to climb.
That's awesome. Let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is a book every woman needs to put into their home library. Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, M.D. covers the entire range of women's health from the first menstrual period through menopause and everything in between. This fully updated version includes the very latest treatment and research data combining new technologies with natural remedies and the miraculous healing powers within the body itself. It's one of the best medical reference books on women's health, and you can get Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, M.D. at Amazon.com.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Sterling, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now's the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
Before the break, we were talking about this idea of moral hazard and long-term care insurance, and all insurance has this concept that we have to plan ahead. You can't buy insurance at the last minute after your car has already been in the accident. And so this same principle works for long-term care insurance. And so we're going to go through more things that we can do to solve this problem, because the government money, as we now well know, will not last forever. So, Steve, what are some more hints for us?
Well, I think it's important to understand that if you take away the a possibility to ignore long-term care, wait until you need it, and turn over the responsibility to fund it to the taxpayers, you're left with a public that has to suddenly take seriously the long-term care risk. There's no more moral hazard. And if they're going to take seriously the long-term care risk, how are they going to deal with it? we were mentioning that especially young couples saving money for their own retirement, for their children's education, paying off their mortgages, paying car loans. How in the world are they going to plan for long-term care? And that's one of the reasons long-term care insurance, the private financial product that enables people to plan ahead, has not had the distribution that one would have hoped. Well, why would people buy insurance when they can ignore the risk, avoid the premiums, wait until they get sick and get the government to pay? When that changes, what do we do? How do we help those young couples deal with this while they're also dealing with other financial responsibilities? Well, one thing we can do is make the long-term care risk a little less daunting. There's new research that shows that only 56% of people will ever need long-term care. 44% don't need it. The average is only about a couple of years of home care that people will need. We've also got new research that shows there's more than enough wealth out there in the economy if it were mobilized and used to fund long-term care. I give you some examples. $12 trillion in home equity, largely unused in the private market for long-term care. Why? Because of Medicaid exempts home equity and all contiguous property up to a minimum of $713,000 starting in 2024. There are trillions upon trillions, something like $22 trillion in life insurance that could be converted to use part of it for long-term care. In retirement savings, something like $32 trillion sitting out there earmarked for retirement. Now, long-term care is generally recognized to be the single biggest risk that older people face as they approach their senescence and the time of life, usually after age 85, when they're most likely to need long-term care. So what we need to do is utilize some of that wealth that is out there in the economy. How can we do that? Well, how about letting people earmark some of their savings for other things to be used for long-term care if and only if they need long-term care? I think the goal ought to be to take the burden off of Medicaid and Medicare for paying for kind of average long-term care risk and preserve those programs so that they can be there for people who are truly destitute and have nowhere else to turn. So if we enable people to earmark some of their home equity, their retirement savings, their life insurance, other resources that they're setting aside, so that if they need long-term care someday, they can pay privately for it and cover the average risk of a couple of years of home care, then we can leave Medicaid to become the payer of last resort, as it was always intended to be, and get it back into its proper role instead of having the role that it has had of paying for virtually everyone's catastrophic care and creating a moral hazard that discourages the public consumers from planning ahead.
Well, this is interesting, some of the things you mentioned. I'd like to say, one, in private insurance, will the insurance industry, let's say that everybody runs out after they hear your talk and buys long-term care insurance, can the industry tolerate a lot of people having long-term care insurance? Are they going to have the reserves and the funds to pay it out?
Well, one of the problems with long-term care insurance is people have figured they have to have catastrophic coverage to cover them against the risk of 5 years or more needing nursing home care. And so naturally, the product's very expensive, if that's the way you conceive it. But the reality is, and we have some research to show this, is that people only had some supplemental income to add to what they already have. They could afford more easily, for example, the kind of assisted living that costs $45,000 or $50,000 a year. So maybe people don't need all that much insurance. And if the government didn't prevent insurance carriers from offering products that provide substantially less than catastrophic protection, then we might be able to get many, many more people insured.
Well, it's interesting you say that, and the government stopping the kind of insurance products, because we've seen this with regular health care. When the Affordable Care Act came out and they had the different tiers of products and the products had to offer these 10 things in their pregnancy care, even if you're a single gay man and you're not going to have pregnancy expenses, all these things make all the insurance products more expensive, even though a person doesn't need everything that Cadillac plans offer. And I think that's an excellent idea if we could get products that just supplemented and were a couple thousand a month, not, oh, they pay the entire $5,000 a month for a nursing home, or products that would pay a family member for helping out. I know there's some out there that do, but not all of them do. So that's a big important thing, private insurance. And we all know when you buy your insurance privately, you generally have more options than if you're dependent on the government and you're dependent on the entities that take government insurance, because all places don't take Medicaid, just like all doctors don't take Medicaid, all doctors don't take Medicare. So, but most of them will take private insurance. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some more of these tools that people can use when they're young and some ideas that don't exist, but maybe we can get our legislators to put them forth after the break.
Keyboard Cat, Hamilton the Pug, and Toast Meets World. These are some of the internet's most beloved pets. And they all have one thing in common. Their stories started in a shelter. Start your story. Adopt a dog or cat today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Training that pet to play the keyboard, that's optional. Start a story. Adopt a shelter or rescue pet today. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
In the small town of Elmira, New York, a boy was born into an all-American family. The odds of him achieving his dream in the fashion industry? 1 in 23 million. The odds of having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I am Tommy Hilfiger, and my family is affected by autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
So what's a great way to spread awareness that driving high is illegal everywhere? A catchy song, of course.
You can run, but you can't drive high. You can run, but you can't drive high.
Friendly reminder, don't drive high. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know.
things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The Bright Side of Talk. HealthyLife.net.
Before the break, we were going down a list that would help especially young folks pay for long-term care so they have more options when their time comes, if it comes, because as Steve Moses said, not everybody's going to need long-term care, so we have to be flexible. So what's another idea for saving for long-term care?
Well, it would be nice if people could set aside money more easily in investment accounts. We have tax-deferred accounts, 401ks and IRAs, but we could have some targeted accounts for long-term care. But in addition, we could set aside, we could earmark parts of the existing retirement accounts for long-term care if they're needed, recognizing that the single biggest risk that aging people have is long-term care. We're concerned about retirement security, but what if somebody requires heavy care early? Well, maybe they're not going to live as long, so they might not need as much income going forward. They're going to need that money up front for long-term care. So enabling people to access money that they're saving anyway for other purposes if they need long-term care is a very promising approach. The retirement savings are substantial, $35.4 trillion, including $12.5 trillion in IRAs, $9.8 trillion in defined contribution accounts, and $10.9 trillion in combined government and private defined benefit plans. On the home equity, vast majority of aging people own their homes, and most of those own them free and clear. There's a substantial wealth sitting there that is going unused for long-term care that could and should be freed up by changing public policy regarding the home equity exemption. I'll pause.
Well, one of the things that strikes me as you say this, and particularly with home equity, a lot of people are thinking, but I want to leave that money for my children. And so the question is, I mean, unless you have a child with no job and they're disabled and for some reason is on the outs, there's sort of a universal question of why should you leave it for their children and you stay in a horrible nursing home just because you're not going to spend the money on yourself to have in-home health and stay in your own home and have a more pleasant final days. So there's kind of a bigger question for people to think about as well.
Well, public policy long ago as the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 1993, public policy has realized that Medicaid creates a perverse incentive for people to protect their wealth for inheritance and undergo all the problems associated with relying on Medicaid for nursing home care. We warehoused our World War II generation in welfare-financed nursing homes, and it's very sad, but back in 1993, public policy stepped in to require estate recovery, that state Medicaid programs, if they're going to give you all of this care, must go into your estate after you die and recover the cost of your care. And the idea there was that people would need to pay now or pay later. One way or another, there was no way to avoid it. Unfortunately, the states didn't implement estate recovery. The federal government didn't enforce it. The media didn't publicize it, and consumer behavior didn't change. So the Medicaid estate recovery has been very weak. And that's why in this solution paper I've proposed a program that we called Deferred Reverse Estate Annuity Mortgage. This would be something like estate recovery under Medicaid. But what it would do is allow people to set aside a portion of their estate to fund their long-term care if and only if they need it. If they don't need it, then the estate would pass to heirs as it would otherwise. But if they do need it, then the estate has been formally with a public record created, a public lien on the estate, so that they would automatically have the resources they need to pay for their long-term care as long as the estate lasted. That would serve to encourage adult heirs of aging people to plan with their parents. Right now, the heirs are rewarded with a windfall inheritance, not for helping mom and dad plan for long-term care, but for ignoring the problem. And then when the parents become cognitively impaired, stepping in to, quote, help them, unquote, by getting them access to Medicaid nursing homes. It's, as I've already said, a kind of corrupt system that creates a moral hazard that discourages responsible behavior. And it's entirely caused by bad public policy that can be changed and fixed. If we get the government out of doing all these things wrong, we can get the public and consumers to plan responsibly and avoid dependency on the public welfare system. And then we can give that public welfare system back to the people who really need it, who are the ones currently crowded out from access to the best care.
Well, it's interesting you talk about getting the money back. In the news lately, there's been a lot of talk of Social Security system clawing back money that they mistakenly gave to people. And most of these were disabled people who, of course, already spent the money. And so I look at it as, how do we trust the government, one, to have this system if you're counting on it X number of years from now? It may not even exist. So you better get on the stick, take care of yourself. And again, this is so true of so many of our health needs that you've got to keep in mind that the government makes mistakes, and at any moment these legislators can overturn whatever exists now, depending on what's going on with money. If somebody sits down and says, we've got 30-some trillion dollars in debt, now it's the time to stop. There could be so many things that make the government stop the program, and you have to start looking out for yourself now. When we get back from the break, we will talk some more about this issue and what we can do with social insurance and how we can take care of people who, in truth, can't afford it.
I know you care about your right to health freedom of choice, but we are under constant attack by industry-driven medical mandates. At MAM.org, you can be part of the solution to keep your rights to health freedom. MAM stands for Millions Against Medical Mandates, and your voice is heard and counted. Visit MAM.org, where doctors, lawyers, journalists, researchers, scientists, and people like you come together to keep our health freedom strong. Together, join the millions at MAM.org. That's MAMM.org.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone?
Do flowers have best friends?
I don't know.
Hey, look.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
To some, a baby's babbling doesn't mean much, but it does. Especially if there's no babbling at all. Little to no babbling by 12 months or later is just one of the possible signs of autism in children. Learn more at autismspeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
You're listening to CHSR Real Radio on the web.
Before the break, we were talking about doing things for ourselves because we can't count on the government to always do it for us. So Steve Moses has some more ideas, and we're going to get right into that.
Absolutely. You brought up Social Security and Medicare. I've made the case that the problems we have with long-term care are related to government policy that took away the public's need to plan ahead. Well, I hate to say this, but it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. The decade of the 2030s is when, as it were, everything hits the fan. That's when Social Security and Medicare, so-called trust funds, which are really phony, they don't exist. They've already been spent by the government. That's when they become insolvent. But what else happens in the 2030s? The baby boom generation, this giant generation that began shortly after World War II, begins turning age 85. And that's the age at which the need for long-term care spikes. People's need for health care in general, but especially long-term care, becomes much greater after age 85. And in the year 2031, the baby boom generation begins turning 85, and their costs and needs are going to skyrocket exactly when the public programs, such as Social Security and Medicare, come under the most financial distress. Now, Social Security and Medicare aren't usually thought of as important to long-term care, which is mostly financed by Medicaid. But those two programs are critical. People on Medicaid who receive long-term care benefits have to contribute their income to offset Medicaid's costs for their care. Where do people at that age get a lot of their income? From Social Security. So if Social Security has to cut back 23%, as is in federal law now, if its trust fund runs out, that will be a major financial hit to Medicaid's ability to fund long-term care and to the income that long-term care providers receive, nursing homes and home care providers. Medicare, as it has to cut back under federal law if its trust fund runs out, is critical to Medicaid's ability to fund long-term care because Medicaid pays long-term care providers often less than the cost of providing the care and always at severely deficient rates, which is what creates the problem of access and quality, creates the problem of caregiver shortages. There just isn't enough Medicaid money in the system to attract people to the business, very difficult business, of providing long-term care. So as Medicare cuts back, that will be another major problem for Medicaid's ability to fund care. And we know that half or more of Medicaid comes from federal funding, but a substantial portion comes from the state contribution to Medicaid. So much more weight will be on the states at a very time when their challenges are greater and greater. We know that inflation has affected the entire economy. Interest rates are up. This gigantic national debt of $34 trillion that has been manageable up to now because of artificially low interest rates, it's going to be unserviceable, which means the federal government is going to lean more heavily on the states to fund long-term care. We just have a perfect storm of catastrophic economic conditions approaching at the very time that people are most likely to need long-term care. So we have an imperative to convert from principally dependency on public programs for long-term care to get more people privately financing and protected. And that's the essence of what we're proposing in the long-term care solution paper.
Well, the thing that's so important about everything you're saying, it goes across the board to so many other programs that just with the Social Security. When Social Security started, there were 5 workers for every person that had to draw on Social Security, not to mention that when they created it, they used the age of 65 for collecting on it because at the time, most people were dead by 64. So it was assumed the system wouldn't have much draw on it. Now we've got 2.5 workers for every person drawing on Social Security. So do the math. Where's the money going to come from? And that's what just strikes me as being dependent on a government program is it could be chopped off at any moment. And then what do you do? Well, in America, we try not to have people in the streets, but we certainly are having a homeless problem now. Well, I can imagine that that sort of thing will only get worse, or we're going to get into really, God forbid, unconsented healthcare rationing, where if you're old, you're sick, get over it, and, you know, we'll just do with you what we can because now we own you because you made yourself dependent on the government. So that's what I think.
Well, I think you're right, and we don't want to follow the course of some countries in Europe where simply denying the care becomes the only cost-effective solution for them. This is a problem that has been created by well-intentioned but perversely counterproductive public policy, and what the government has done, it can reverse, but it takes people to support realistic public policy to solve these problems. Either that, or we get to the point economically that the current system is unsustainable and we have to go somewhere else. So frankly, what my research has been about is to point out that if we do get to the point where these current policies just cannot be carried out because there just aren't the resources to support them, then let's be ready with ideas that will work. And we'll test them maybe only when we're forced to, but at least we have them. We're ready when the time comes.
And that was all so well said, and it's just we have to remember, because we tend to procrastinate sometimes on things like this, that we have to have a more do-it-now, prepare-for-the-future. And I know this isn't a happy topic, but something we have to discuss, because, I mean, our golden years are supposed to be golden, not filled with anxiety and trauma and living in ways we don't want to live. So remember, dear listeners, each patient carries his own doctor inside him, and we are at our best when we give that doctor who resides in us a chance to work, so says Dr. Albert Schweitzer. And I just want to thank Mr. Stephen Moses for coming on the show and informing us of this really important topic.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
This is a book every woman needs to put into their home library. Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, MD, covers the entire range of women's health from the first menstrual period through menopause and everything in between. This fully updated version includes the very latest treatment and research data combining new technologies with natural remedies and the miraculous healing powers within the body itself. It's one of the best medical reference books on women's health, and you can get Women's Body, Women's Wisdom by Christiane Northrup, MD at Amazon.com.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now this same technology is available to you. They have the best Earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now. So come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 1-800-849-8978. That's 1-800-849-8978.
Everybody down!
Dwayne Johnson here. The earthquakes you see in movies are one thing, but real life is a completely different animal. Just because you can't predict an earthquake doesn't mean that you can't prepare for one. In the event of a real earthquake, you should drop, cover, and hold on. Visit ready.gov/earthquake and practice what to do to keep you and your family safe in the event of a real earthquake, and you'll be seen as a hero by your family and your loved ones.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.